Welcome to episode 224 of the G2 on 5G. It's the latest inside scoop on everything 5G and more. We cover six topics in about 20 minutes, and it's brought to you by More Insights and Strategy. I'm Will Townsend, and joining me again this week is fellow analyst Anshul Sag. We've been a little dark for the last couple of weeks, but Anshul and I have both been traveling quite a bit. This is the 5G bat phone in the Moxie Lower East Hotel in Manhattan. And so that's where I'll be recording our podcast today. But I want to start with my first topic, AST Space Mobile announcing a new consumer satellite service. And so, Anshul, I don't know if you caught this, but it was on the company's recent earnings call where AST CEO Abel Avilian, one of my good friends, talked about having a beta service available sometime by the end of this year, then a commercial service available in 2026. And this would include, according to Abel, potentially text, internet, data, and access to applications like video conferencing. So this is really interesting because when I first weighed in on all of this a couple of years ago, what I was really impressed with was that AST Space Mobile was taking more of a middleware approach, right? In enabling solutions and not competing. And I contrasted that with Starlink because they obviously have a satellite service. But now it seems AST Space Mobile's strategy is changing a little bit. I can't find fault with that because it's just it's a tremendous opportunity for the company to monetize a service. But what do you think? I'm assuming you caught this news.
I actually didn't. I've been buried. Okay. I've been quite buried across many things. So I actually did miss this. Okay. But what I do think that's interesting is that you're right. It does sound like they're trying to become a bit more horizontal. And the truth is, I think they started horizontal. Now they're trying to move more vertical. But I think what's interesting is this might be a function of the agreements that they've put in place with all of the different carriers. Because the thing is that while AST does have the satellites and the ground stations, they still have to also have the spectrum. And I think maybe their agreements with all of these carriers enables them to potentially utilize these carriers' spectrum around the world, which would then potentially give them the opportunity to use that spectrum for their own customers and give those customers global coverage. Obviously, there would have to be, they'd probably still have to pay for that bandwidth. But I think it's just an opportunity for them to better utilize the network they've already implemented, make the most of their satellite network. Because the truth is, if you look at like the economics of a lot of these satellite networks that predate all these LEO constellations, that the number one driver of profit for these networks is utilization. If they can get utilization as high as possible without affecting the user experience, I think that's a real good thing for their long-term viability as a satellite company, because we've seen a lot of satellite companies come and go. A few of them have gone bankrupt multiple times. I think that's really an important thing to consider when it comes to AST, is long-term viability and being that bridge between different parts of the core, parts of the globe, or world, however you want to say it.
And hey, AT&T and Vodafone have both made a financial investment in the company, right? You could think that, hey, those carriers are not going to get in necessarily to providing a discrete satellite-based broadband service, but they will benefit with AST Space Mobile doing that on their own because they've made financial investments in the company. So the strategy has changed a little bit. Last year, the investments occurred by those two big MNOs, including Google. So yeah, I agree. They're going to have to monetize the investment that they're making in putting more and more satellites in the air. So it makes perfect sense to me. But hey, let's go to your first topic. And you want to talk about EchoStar. I wasn't aware of this, but they're potentially being investigated by the FCC.
Yeah, so this is an interesting development because this actually started a few weeks ago. And then it became clear that SpaceX's complaints around EchoStar were very similar to what the FCC was investigating them about, specifically about their ability to deliver 5G services across the US and whether they're using all of their spectrum licenses. So this is really about EchoStar and its Boost Mobile 5G network, which I actually recently got a tablet from Boost to test out their network. So I'm excited to try that out because it's been a while since they've launched and I haven't had a chance to try it. But really what it is, it's they're trying to say that Boost isn't making their terms correct. And what's really interesting is that there's a lot of political back and forth because Ergun is trying to get the Trump administration to give them more wiggle room like they did with Biden. And, right. and the FCC chair Carr has an investigation into EchoStar specifically regarding their spectrum and the availability to utilize the 2 gigahertz band. So it's interesting is SpaceX wants to use this 2 gigahertz band. Some people are wondering whether or not it has to do with Trump's involvement with Elon and whether or not SpaceX is part of this.
So right.
It's really unfortunate. And I really hope that EchoStar and Boost do actually have a successful network for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
But also, they do have a reputation for being a spectrum squatter.
Dude, Charlie's got the biggest reputation doing that. So I don't care if we're talking about Dish or EchoStar totally. Now.
It's the same thing.
It is.
But yeah, it really seems to be there's a lot of interest in the spectrum that they have.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I can really trust that it will be an objective investigation, which is really my biggest concern, because it's not like we're the biggest fans of EchoStar and Dish. But I just think that it would be really unfair and unfortunate if SpaceX was the one to be able to take advantage of this technology, of this spectrum. So
right.
It'll be really interesting to see how this investigation moves forward and whether it will be a fair investigation.
So what's the expected sort of conclusion on all this, Anshul? Has that been shared publicly? Like, when does the FCC expect to wind its investigation down and come to some decisions?
They just said that they've started their investigation.
Yeah.
And there's a quote in this light reading article. It says, Carr said he would do so to help inform the FCC's thinking about EchoStar's use of spectrum.
Okay.
So there's a lot of really interesting things in here. And the context ahead of time is that there's some stuff about SpaceX trying to convince the FCC to take the spectrum from EchoStar and give it to SpaceX. SpaceX recently alleged in an FCC filing that the 5G network built by EchoStar's Dish network in some cases operates at power levels that are just 1 to 5% of what would be expected as compared to operations by its rivals. So they're trying to say that they're not even trying to
build the network.
Yeah. And it's AWS 4 band, so it's 2 gigahertz. It's a block of 20 megahertz and then another block of 20 megahertz in the 2200 and 2000 megahertz bands. So there's a decent amount of spectrum there.
Yeah.
And it seems like SpaceX really wants a spectrum. And while I think it's valid to question EchoStar's 5G network, I do think there should be an impartial investigation to determine whether or not this is spectrum squatting, which we know they've been responsible and caught doing before.
Yeah.
I also think other operators should have a chance at that spectrum. Maybe it goes to auction.
I agree.
But I don't think SpaceX should be the only ones that have access to it.
I agree. And you're right. The optics on Elon's involvement with Doge, even if that's officially been concluded or not, just it puts a lot of things in question as to whether is there going to be a fair evaluation here. So I get it. We're not going to get political. But yeah, it'll just be interesting. So we will definitely monitor this situation. I wasn't aware of this, and we might want to come back on a future podcast and update our viewers and listeners. But let me go to my second topic. I'm going to be really quick with this. And I hate to be cruel, but I both got the email on Mobile World Congress Las Vegas and its evolution, right? And I think most people know that MWC Las Vegas was a reconstituted CTIA event. And the CTIA, wrong or indifferent, just hasn't done a good job of getting people to their event. So the GSMA folks came in, hoped to save it, and turned it into a regional event. It was in LA, it was moved to Vegas. And I've attended over the last few years, and it's just never gotten the momentum that it's needed. And so now this year, you and I in our inboxes get this note around how it's the event's being rebranded to be focused on more of an enterprise-led show. And hey, I get it. When you look at sort of private cellular, we are beginning to see the adoption ramp a little bit. Although I did read some news recently from another market research company that kind of they beg to differ. They don't see the robustness and the uptake on private cellular, but wrong or indifferent, it's just really interesting. And just, it makes me wonder, and I think you and I had a sidebar on this. Is it time just to put a fork in this event? Because it's obviously it's not getting the attendance that the other MWC events get, such as Barcelona and Singapore, and we're not Singapore, the Asia events,
Shanghai,
and the Shanghai event as well. What do you think? Is it time for folks to put a fork in it and move on?
I do think that this event should go away, but yeah. I will also say, moving from LA to Vegas, I don't think that really did anything for it. I think it just made it easier for them to find hotels. But what I do think is, I saw some recent news that Verizon is going to start pivoting away from talking about their network and more talking about their services.
Yeah,
And we've seen that from T-Mobile and AT&T as well. So I think maybe this is a change of sentiment from the carriers who have been the drivers of the CTIA event, saying right. that maybe they want to turn this into more of a telecom enterprise show where enterprise companies and buyers and services can meld together with telecoms to deploy appropriately. I'm not really sure, but that's like my only reasoning why this might make sense is that operators are trying to turn into enterprise solution providers.
Yeah.
And that this might be their way of saying that.
Yeah, no, clearly with T-Mobile, what they're doing with their advanced network solutions, they are focused on outcome, not access. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that with my third and final topic, but I think it's an accurate observation. And let's see if the third time's a charm here, but I have your sentiment. It's like, I don't plan to attend this year. In fact, I've worked with the T-Mobile team on the Unconventional Awards. This is part of T-Mobile for Business. And they've actually moved that award celebration to a different event. And so it won't be at MWC Las Vegas. And yeah, so it'll be interesting. I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but this event just hasn't found its footing for many years. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But hey, let's go to your second topic. You want to talk about T-Mobile. They've got some information that they've posted from Ookla around the performance of their network, and it's pretty impressive. I did catch this news, but why don't you share that with our viewers and listeners?
Yeah, so it's actually like a double whammy here. The first was that they announced that they were able to do 550 megabits per second uplink on a sub-6 connection. So that's not with any millimeter wave at all. So that's a pretty big achievement. But then on top of that, there was an article that I saw on Light Reading that was about looking at network performance. And there's a graph that obviously I still have to figure out how to use this platform, but in the future, I will be able to show graphs as we do these live streams. They showed the 21 Ultra, 22 Ultra, 23 Ultra, 24 Ultra, and 25 Ultra from Samsung and how those perform on all three networks and how much better your performance can improve as you upgrade to a newer high-end smartphone. And the truth is the S20 whatever Ultra is going to be the best network performance device you have. So that's why obviously T-Mobile would benefit from this. They were showing on the S25 Ultra that T-Mobile's median download speed was 442 megabits per second.
Jeez Louise.
That's compared to Verizon's 315 and AT&T's 216. But what's crazy is if you get, like, let's say you got the S25 Ultra on Verizon, you would be as fast as the 22 Ultra on T-Mobile, you know, now. Yeah. So it's really interesting because this is a conversation I always have with people is if you're not having a good experience on your phone, it's probably your phone and it's not right. The network. In fact, in some cases, you're being left behind by the network because the network's being upgraded. There's new bands being introduced, new technology.
And your phone doesn't have the capability.
And your phone doesn't support them. So if you had an S21 Ultra, your peak speed on T-Mobile is almost half of what it would be on a 25.
Yeah.
So that's median download, not even peak. So right. I just think that I live in a world where I'm getting the latest S series from Samsung. I'm lucky to be like that. But the truth is it improves coverage, it improves speeds, and it just shows when you have the right equipment, you can really make the most of the best network. And even on Verizon, you're getting 315 if you have the latest S25 Ultra. I think it's really important that equipment makes a difference. Modems make a difference. I'm actually working on assessing the Apple C1 modem on the new 16E and seeing how that compares to like an S25 Ultra. or maybe even a base 25 just because those are more close in price. But anyways, just something I'm working on, but also really shows, you know, what you can do on a really good network with a really good phone.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to have both, right? You got to have the phone that's going to be compatible, and you've got to have a kick-ass network, and T-Mobile's built a kick-ass standalone network, right? And but Verizon and AT&T are closing the gap there. But yeah, it's been interesting. Hey, and we'll just take that victory lap again. You and I, like years ago, when the whole notion of T-Mobile acquiring Sprint was fading very quickly, and we flash forward now. It's been, boy, it's been about 5 or 6 years, but it's been fun to watch for sure. But hey, let me hit my third and final topic, and I alluded to this. We were talking about how mobile network operators really, in order to monetize the billions of euros and billions of dollars that are invested in these networks from spectrum acquisition and infrastructure perspective, they've got to move beyond access, right? Security is a big deal. The nature of mobile networks or the threat surfaces are massive when you think about the number of subscribers, the number of devices per subscriber. And it's interesting that both AT&T and T-Mobile, within just a few weeks of one another, have announced partnerships with Palo Alto Networks. And Palo Alto Networks does a number of different things very well from a security standpoint. Palo Alto Networks has really driven what I call the power of platform and moving away from best of breed bespoke solutions to a cluster of highly effective solutions that cover the majority of security needs for enterprises and organizations. There's a lot of advantages there from a licensing perspective and from a management perspective. And what I really like about Palo Alto Networks is that they've been very focused on secure access service edge, so SASE, but a 5G flavor of that. And so at RSA conference, AT&T announced a partnership with Palo Alto Networks where AT&T's Dynamic Defense is being leveraged with Palo Alto Networks' Prisma Access solution. And what this does is it enhances cybersecurity posture from both an owned network, so an enterprise that's managing the infrastructure and all of that on their network, but also unowned as traffic comes over the internet and it enters into a private enterprise network. Having a level of visibility and security with that is very important. And security is all about a layered approach, right? The more layers you can bring to bear from a very highly manageable perspective, the better security posture you can maintain. So that's the nature of AT&T's announcement with Palo Alto Networks. Now, just today, T-Mobile announced a similar partnership, again, enhancing what they're already doing with their 5G SASE solution. And just to refresh our viewers and listeners on this, T-Mobile they're in the midst of deploying 5G Advanced on their standalone network. They have a T-SIM Secure solution, which is a SIM-based clientless authentication, something that leverages what they've been doing with their TIoT solution as well. And then you and I have talked about the T-Mobile security slice as well. And that was announced, it's been at least a year or longer. And I've written about that and have commented on how I think that's very unique and different because T-Mobile has the only nationwide standalone network, they can do network slicing. And so they've done the security slice that's tailored to complement what they're doing from the SASE perspective. So I really like this because for the longest time, T-Mobile was just someone else's SD-WAN solution and the SASE solution. So this really brings a lot of, I think, differentiation and value. So what T-Mobile for Business is doing with their 5G SASE solution. And also, and I'm not going to throw water on what AT&T is doing as well, Dynamic Defense is a tremendous effort to embed security controls directly into the network fabric. So it's a different approach than T-Mobile's. Yeah, so I think this is great. It's going to bring monetization opportunities for Palo Alto Networks, AT&T, and T-Mobile. And it's going to deliver just stronger security for customers that utilize it. And I know security is not a big strength of yours. You don't focus on that too much. But what do you think about the monetization opportunities here?
I would say most of my security focus is client-based.
It is. Versus
but I would say that it's interesting because one of the biggest challenges I've seen with 5G networks and something like, let's say, standalone is just like industry adoption. Yep. So I think if more operators are offering differentiated security capabilities, I think what that does is it sets enterprises and developers up for a better understanding of the environment. And I think maybe it's one of those things where it's like standardization might be something that would benefit the operators and the industry. And maybe a more standardized approach for these kind of security solutions would be great. But it also sounds like this is something that the operators want to offer as a differentiated offering and give themselves a little bit of a unique approach to security. I think it's in net, it's a good thing. And I think it also builds on what I was saying earlier, where these operators want to become more of like a solution deliverer as opposed to just a dumb pipe, because they hate being called a dumb pipe. So it's like moving opposite direction.
Yeah. And I agree. And didn't mean to cut you off there, but I think AT&T and Verizon have probably done a better job in the past in focusing on enterprise solutions versus T-Mobile. But I got to give the TFB credit and Cali Field. They're really upping their game. And I really like this announcement. I really like the AT&T announcement as well. And it really demonstrates the depth and breadth and the strength of Palo Alto Networks to be able to work with two of the largest mobile network operators in the United States. So I think it's great. But hey, let's wrap things up. Let's go hit your third topic. You want to talk about, I'm probably going to mispronounce the company. Is it Xiaomi? Am I pronouncing that correctly? Xiaomi. And they are going to announce their own smartphone SoC. And so you want to provide some highlights on that.
Yes, this is going to be called the X-Ring 01. It is their first smartphone SoC that they've built in-house. It was announced by the CEO himself on China's version of Twitter. And that whole like announcement on Weibo, which is the Chinese version of Twitter, they said that they'll announce it in late May, and that some leaks have indicated that it will be built on TSMC's 4-nanometer process, which is not its most recent 3-nanometer. It's actually been on like three generations of 3-nanometer now. Yeah. So it's a little bit of an older node. It will be a 7-core setup. It will probably use standard ARM cores from what I would assume. There haven't been very many clear indications on what the specs will be. They haven't really confirmed it. But what's interesting is that people are already acknowledging that it likely won't be close to the most current flagships from Qualcomm and MediaTek, but that it will probably be closer to something like a couple generations behind. So this won't be a flagship SoC for flagship phones. But what I'm hearing from the market is that this is a continuation of government efforts to push Chinese smartphone manufacturers to have their own SoCs. And what I find really interesting is Huawei has been banned from using TSMC, but it seems that Xiaomi hasn't. So I'm very curious about how that's going to work out and what the administration is going to do and how TSMC is going to have to explain that. We'll see when the launch happens later this month. But I do think it's really interesting because they haven't done their own in-house chipset since 2017. It's been 8 years. So I'm pretty sure most of the people who built that first one aren't with the company anymore. And it's just really interesting because I think we're going to see more homegrown Chinese SoCs, but they're not going to be able to compete with the likes of MediaTek and Qualcomm because they're probably not going to have access to the latest process nodes nor licenses to the most recent ARM cores. This is going to be an interesting development that I think we should follow and continue to pay attention to, because it could also find its way into wearables and other segments of the market. But it's an interesting development just because I think we're going to see more Chinese OEMs having to do their own chips because the Chinese government's probably mandating it. And it's just a cool, interesting update. And I'll stay on top of it because I'm our semiconductor guy.
You are. And I'm leaning into that as well when it comes to interconnects. And I've published some stuff with Intel and Marvell, and Broadcom had a big co-package optics announcement today. Hopefully I'm not breaking the embargo on that.
Everybody,
I just flew across the country and I'm a little tired, but
everybody has some kind of co-packaged optics solution now.
It's the hottest thing. Credit NVIDIA GTC for
Intel,
launching.
NVIDIA, Broadcom. I'm sure we're going to see it from AMD.
You're going to see a bunch of startups as well. I just got off a call with someone that you and I know that used to be at Qualcomm that's at a startup now, and they took me through what they're doing with co-package optics as well. But hey, my friend, it's been another great podcast. We need to be doing these weekly. I'm to blame, I think, for a lot of that with my crazy travel, but why don't you take us home?
Absolutely. We hope our viewers and listeners found next week's topics interesting. If anyone out there would like to reach out and provide insights on a specific 5G topic for a future podcast, please reach out to us on social media. Will is at WillTownTech, and I'm at Anshul. We hope you have a great weekend, and please tune in again next week.